Okay. So the project 3 statistics and comments will be sent by the TA soon, probably by the time you go back. Okay. So are there any questions before I continue? Today's main topic is mass validation processes, value and policy iteration. But before we get there, are there any questions? So this is the class for me to mess up because it's actually beautiful material. Most classes are beautiful material, but this one is particularly good. So if you don't get excited after this class about this area, you can see that it must be me, you know, because the topic itself is beautiful. Okay, there's no question in my mind. Okay, anything else? Any questions on anything? Okay, so since we were having this discussion on utilities, one thing that we did is basically we skipped over chapter 16, which is a very beautiful chapter on utility theory and how you actually connect outcomes to utilities and how people can have different utilities for the same sorts of outcomes. Just as Bayesian probability theory says you can have personal probabilities, okay, as long as you're consistent, you can have personal probabilities. Okay. In fact, that's a weirder thing, but most of us agree that the utilities of different states may be different for different people, which is the reason why, you know, we do different things. Okay. But it's worth reading that chapter actually to get your understanding of utilities clearer. But let's just look at this one. It's an interesting thought experiment. So you guys are people that I'm actually interviewing right now. So you have two lotteries, lottery A or lottery B, that you can take part in. Okay. So if you take part in lottery A, you get $4,000 with 80% chance. And so 20% chance you don't get anything. Okay. If you can take part in lottery B instead, and in which case you get 100% chance of getting $3,000. Do you understand what I'm saying? So obviously expected money here is 3,200, okay? So my question is, imagine yourself actually making this decision. How many of you would go with lottery A? You have to choose. I mean, this is not, I'm just asking your way you make decisions. Forget about the fact that it's an AI class or utility-oriented class. If you actually had this, you had to decide, there are two people doing lotteries and you have to pick one of them. Which would, you know, how many of you would have gone with lottery A? This guy. How many of you would have gone with lottery B? Okay, so without actually saying anything, there is a majority which seems to go for lottery B. Okay, and in fact, we have proverbs in English and in all the languages, etc. What's one proverb that kind of makes this point? Exactly. I mean, two birds in a bush, my God, I mean, it's like double, right? And yet, we are told that a bird in a hand is worth more than two in a bush. Okay, so that's exactly what we're doing here. Yes, sir?
Just getting insurance a little bit like the opposite.
Yes, wait for a second, actually. Okay, so that's one thing. So in this case, you have decided that lottery, most people seem to, I didn't ask you to do it, just, you know, most people seem to think that lottery B is better than lottery A. Okay? Now I have a different set now. I forgot about that old lottery. Okay, this is a new lottery now. Lottery C, you take 20% chance of getting 4,000, 80% chance of getting nothing. Okay, and lottery D, which is 25% chance of getting 3,000 and 75% chance of getting nothing. Okay, so obviously these are not as good lotteries as the previous ones. Now again, let's just, by show of hands, how many people would like to go with lottery C? Okay. How many people would like to go with lottery D? It's kind of weird. Yeah, so it's more or less equal in this case for whatever reason. Okay, but The general idea, normally, if you ask random set of people, seems to be that, in fact, people would go for lottery C more than lottery D. Okay, I'm not making any judgments as to whether reasonable humans are not. Okay, I mean, this guy is a reasonable human too. Okay, I'm just saying majorities. So now here's the interesting thing. So in this lottery, people, majority of people, tend to pick this. And in this lottery, in this set, majority of people tend to pick this. Now, is that okay? Let's see what it's actually saying. One thing that we have to point out is dollars doesn't have to be utility. Money is not equal to utility. Okay, that's one thing that you know, you have to understand, because in fact the entire lottery enterprise will fall apart if people actually assumed that $10,000 has 10,000 times the utility of $1. Okay, we normally have very different nonlinear connections between the dollars and utilities. So dollars on the x-axis, utility on the y-axis, and it's not a linear function at all. It's a very nonlinear function. Okay, so we have to understand that. So the real question is there a consistent utility that people seem to be using for dollars to utility numbers? Okay. Now, if you believe in, if you see this to the extent you understand that in the majority of people seem to be picking this, and majority of the people seem to be picking this, essentially what they're saying here is 0.8, assuming they are doing rational decisions, maximally expected decisions, right? 0.8 times utility of 4,000 is less than utility of 3,000, which is why you picked utility of 3,000 directly. Agreed? Okay, and if majority picked this, that means 0.2 times utility of 4,000 is actually greater than 0.25 times utility of 3,000, which actually means 0.8 times utility of 4,000 is greater than utility of 3,000. So here I said this, here I said this. So this is the same set of people whom you are asking. I mean, you know, and so the point is that even after realizing that utilities cannot may be different from dollar amounts. Okay? So there is no real reason to assume that utilities and dollars are even linearly related. In fact, there is enough work which shows that if you consider this is the dollar amount of your assets and this is the utility, it sort of is somewhat like this. That's the way utility is connected to dollars for most people. Okay, that means in the small region, it's sort of linear. Okay, in faraway regions, it's basically like, it's the usual thing they say, it's your first million that's bigger than your second million. Right, I mean, second million doesn't add as much. Okay, so utility sort of tapers down here, and the same way here, for the guy who is already sunk, what's $1 more million of debt? Okay. So the utilities tend to be like this if you actually ask people. And there are ways of assessing utilities, systematic ways of assessing utilities. Okay. So first point about this is that, in fact, the utilities can be different from dollars. And different people might be using different mapping. The real question is, are they at least consistent? And what this shows is that, in fact, people are not consistent if you see people in terms of maximal expected utility, you know, in terms of making decisions in terms of maximal expected utility. Okay, and there's a lot of interesting work in psychological literature which sort of tries to figure out. So the idea is maximal expected utility is a normative theory. It tells you how rational agents should work. Nobody said we are rational. Okay. The question, of course, is it descriptive? Does it describe how we actually perform in normal decision making? And the idea, of course, is we don't. And in fact, this example is a clean way of showing that. There's a bunch of psychologists who have looked at this problem, and they have essentially come to the conclusion that people are risk averse with high probability events, but are willing to take risks with unlikely payoffs. Okay, which is more or less almost tailored to make sense of this. Okay, when you have, these are high probability events. When you have high probability events, you don't want to take any risk. Okay, but when you have very unlikely stuff, anyway, this is not going to happen, this is not going to happen. Might as well go for the big thing. Okay. So this sort of, you have to understand how people actually seem to deal with utilities to understand whether or not they're doing, you know, rational, whether or not their behavior can be explained by maximal expected utility-based decision making. Okay. If you're interested in this stuff, read this particular problem was taken, the example and discussion was taken from section 16.3 of Russell and Norvig. We are not looking at the entire section 16, but it's worth reading anyway. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
This is inconsistent. Could we put the point 8 as a parameter in the utility function?
There are varieties of ways. In fact, in particular, if you read 16.3, they talk about two different points. One is expected monetary value of a lottery. Okay? And also the certainty amount of a lottery. Okay, so the idea is expected monetary value is believing in rational, you know, probability-based decision making. What is the expected value of this lottery? Okay, if you have a lottery, for example, of getting $1,000 with 50% probability and zero with 0% probability, I'm sorry, with 50% probability, right? Then expected value of the lottery is $500. And people are willing to give up that lottery. So the certainty amount is, if you ask normal people like you and me, we are obviously abnormal, but you know, if you ask a large number of people, what is the average amount that they need upfront so that they don't need to take part in the lottery? Okay, so for example, if I say, I'll give you $1 now, or you get to, I get to toss a coin and you'll get, you know, if it comes heads, you'll get $1,000, if it comes tails, you get $0. Which would you rather have? Most people say, no, I would try this. You know, for $1, what's the big deal? Okay? But as the amount increases, at some point of time, depending on your interest, depending in particular on your current amount of money, this is the other thing. In fact, utility should not be just seen in terms of what the decision adds, what the decision had, but how much did you have to begin with? Because utilities are in terms of states. Okay? So if you had $0, and I give you $10, that's a huge improvement in your life quality. If you have, you know, $10 million and I give you $10, it's negligible improvement in your life quality. So your utilities also will have that kind of a distinction. Okay? So the point is that if you take normal, average, middle class people and ask them what is the amount that they need so that they don't have to take part in this $1,000, you know, coin toss lottery, apparently it comes to around 400. Now again, I can't be sure. You know, I myself might need a different number. Okay? And the point is that, so what's interesting is the certainty amount is about $400. Expected monetary value of the lottery is $500. And that comes to your point. The difference between 500 and 400 is the insurance premium. Right? So you are worried. This is the reason we take insurances. Okay, so the idea is this lottery, you know, with some small probability, your house will go up in flames, in which case you will have a large loss. With one minus that small probability, nothing happens to you. It's a lottery. The question is, how willing are you to take part in that lottery? Okay, and now you can't ask you that question unless I ask you, what is the certainty amount? So suppose instead of taking part in this lottery, you give away this much money to me, then you don't have to take part in this lottery. That's what insurance companies are telling you. Okay, you pay us this premium, then even if your house goes up in flame, you don't have to care. We'll get back your house. And or we'll find some way of wheedling out. But, you know, until then, at least you'll feel good. Okay? So the difference between 500 and 400 is the insurance premium. And what's interesting is for an insurance company which has large amount of assets, throwing in, you know, losing like $1 million or like $200,000 on a house is negligible change in the utility. For you who have more or less the only thing in your life is a house, if it goes away, it's a much bigger loss of utility. Okay, so there is a lot more to utility and decision making of humans than just the numbers. So the in particular thing is, first of all, at least realize that utilities can be personal. And utilities don't have to be linearly connected to any specific entity such as dollars. Okay, and what's more interesting, in fact, if you read 16, you'll also talk about multi-attribute decision theory, where you have, there is no easy way of combining, converting everything into dollars. Okay, suppose you are trying to, I mean, there's a nice example in 16 where they talk about, you're trying to put, you know, site a airport. Where should you put the airport in a big city? Depending on different locations, there is a different kinds of noise problems, different kinds of possible deaths, different kinds of possible pollution problems, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the best way is convert everything into dollars, okay? And in which case, you can just do one single attribute decision theory. But sometimes, there is no obvious way of combining, converting noise pollution into equivalent of dollars, let's say. So then what you would wind up doing is essentially multi-objective optimization in the context of these utilities, okay? And one nice thing is that much of the decision theory, of course, has to, human decisions have to put some value to each thing. If you don't put a value by saying it's invaluable, sometimes it actually might mean that it has zero value. Okay. In again, chapter 16, there is a very nice little example about how a particular school district somewhere decided to figure out whether or not it is worth removing all the asbestos from the various schools. So that you can, you know, because to remove asbestos, you need to spend a lot of money, right? And now the question is, if you don't remove, what happens? A couple of kids will get cancer, okay? Now, how do you decide this? You have to give a value to human lives. So they hired a consultancy company. This consultancy company took a specific number as the value of a kid's life. And then they did analysis end to end and figured out that it actually makes sense to remove the asbestos from the schools. Because even if you just care about the bottom line, right, in fact, removal of asbestos, the money you spend in removing the asbestos is less than the money you would lose if these kids were to die. So then they sent this recommendation to the governor's office of that state. And the governor and the rest of the legislators were righteously indignant. They said, how could you put a dollar value to our little kids' lives? They are invaluable, okay? So they removed the recommendation, they threw it out. And guess what? They didn't actually do anything about the schools. So the asbestos still remained in the schools. So now in essence, what did they do? They actually decided the children's lives are zero. By not doing anything, they decided the children's lives are zero. So the point is, however bad it might look to give a number to various outcomes, not giving numbers isn't necessarily giving them infinite numbers. Okay, at least the way things work. Okay, so that's the sort of thing. And as far as the lottery question that I asked in the blog, part of the explanation that people as to why lottery seems to work. I mean, there are many complex explanations. One, at least, is that the utility that you provide to $1 is not the same as the the utility you provide to $1 million is not 1 million times the utility you provide to $1. It could be less, it could be more. Okay, for somebody like Bill Gates, $1 million, not much of a utility. $1, not much of a utility. Okay, because this guy is starting with $30 billion. Okay, for a grad student, who knows? And for somebody who has nothing to eat, it's much more different. So guess who actually winds up buying most lottery tickets? People in middle class, upper middle classes, rich people, really poor people. Really poor people. It's well known. I'm not making this up. Okay, so essentially, really poor people are desperate to take the chance. Okay, to get out of the, so for them, the $1 million essentially wind up having utility that's more than 1 million times the utility of $1. So then it can start making sense. Now this is part of the reason why there are arguments saying lottery systems, I mean many people talk about how good lottery systems are. For example, lottery systems help you apparently take money from citizens without asking them to pay taxes, and then convert them into schools, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? But there's also an opposite argument saying that lottery system is a regressive tax. It taxes poorer people more than the richer people, because richer people don't buy the lottery tickets. Okay? Anyway, so there is a lot more. That's the answer to that particular, that's the kind of discussion for that particular question. Any other things on utilities? Yes, sir. How to assess utilities that people have is a hard thing. Okay, there are protocols for doing it. Okay, again, chapter 16 talks about it. But what normally seems to happen is people are always wrong in giving their personal utilities, and then but over a period of time they become better in giving the right utilities. And this is again connected to things like, you know, this shows up in multiple different scenarios in our lives. So for example, there are studies showing that, I think I may have mentioned this in the class some other time, that if you go something looking like the speed dating services, and then you ask people who go into the, before the speed dating starts, you know, what are you looking for in your prospective mate? Everybody is looking for certain things, okay? And then they will fill this sheet up, and then actually after the speed dating thing is over, then you ask who are the people you liked, and then you tick them too. And there is barely any correlation between what you said you are looking for and what you actually liked, which basically says we have no clue what we want. And, you know, I mean, men try to say that women have no clue what they want. Women try to say men have no clue what they want. The reality is we have no clue what we want. Okay. And what we might do is if we keep doing speed dating and nothing else every day, you can improve, you know, in deciding what you are looking for. But I don't know whether you want to do that. Okay, so the answer to your question is, upfront we don't necessarily know how much the utility is, but we can be trained to guess it correctly for ourselves. Okay. Anyway, any other questions? Okay, so now we are going back to what we left off last time, which is Markov decision processes. I assume that you remember much of what we discussed last time, and I'm more or less going somewhat more technically into the way the policies and value functions are defined. Okay, so obviously, given a Markov decision process, a solution is a policy. Okay, a policy, as I said, is a mapping from states to actions. Okay, now if there are A actions that you can do, at most, maximum of A actions you can do in any state, and there are a total of F states, then you should be able to see that the number of distinct policies are A power F. It's finite. Okay? I mean, it's a very bad finite number, but it's finite number. So you know that all you need to know is figuring out among these policies which is the best policy. Now notice, of course, that if you have continuous action, if you have continuous actions, so for example, you know, an action could be to increase the gas by certain amount. Now this amount can be continuous value. Then of course the number of actions are continuous too. So there are infinite number of actions, so this view doesn't work well. Okay, we are assuming actions which are parameterized such that there are actually discrete number of them. And even there are, you know, there are a huge number of policies. Okay, now the question of course is, what is the optimal policy? Okay, now before we even go and define the optimal policy, let's talk about, do we believe that there's going to be a single optimal policy for the Markov decision process, which only depends on the state, or is there something else? Okay, first thing you have to understand, of course, even though I didn't say it earlier, you hopefully know this, is the Markov in the Markov decision process essentially says, your decision depends only on the current state. It doesn't depend on how you got to that state. Okay? I can easily set up decision problems where your best decision from a state depends on how you got to the state. But then I can take such a problem and increase the state space exponentially such that it again becomes Markov. Okay? So the whole point of Markovness is it's history independent. All that matters is the current state. Once you got to the current state, that's all you need to know. Okay. The second thing is, so that's the Markov part. The second thing is, does the policy possibly depend on something other than just the current state? And for that, essentially, we talk about horizon. The issue is, how long do you have before you make a judgment on me? Okay, a horizon is the number of possible actions, number of states you get to do before they say time up. Okay, and so the question, of course, is do you have finite horizon or infinite horizon? If it is finite horizon, that means there is a limit on the total number of states you get to transition through before somebody says stop. Okay, if it's infinite horizon, all that means is I don't have a restriction on the number of states you get to go through. Okay, so I don't have any restriction. So the interesting thing, of course, is upfront, it looks as if finite horizon case should be somewhat easier than the infinite horizon case, right? Because somehow, at least, you know, it all ends soon. But the interesting part, of course, is in a finite horizon case, your optimal action depends on how long you have. How close are you to the horizon? Okay? And so, for example, if you are in this particular problem, and I say that your horizon is infinite, okay, you obviously would try to come this side and go like this. If you remember, I don't remember if this is optimal or not. Whereas if you only have one action left, you do the Hail Mary pass. You do the best you can, you know, because you only have one action. You know, even if it's very unlikely to get into the high reward state, and even if it has high chance of getting into low reward state, you do it anyway. Okay, that's the optimal thing to do when you have lower horizon. Okay, so the interesting point is that when you have a fixed horizon, there is not a single policy, but you have essentially a sequence of policies. Okay, where a policy is now a function from a policy pi is a function from the current state and the time to death. Okay, pi is a function from current state and time to death to action. And if you are far from death, you have a different policy. Closer to death, you have a different policy. In particular, for each, if I say the horizon is 400, you could potentially have 400 different policies. Okay, depending on how much time you have to go. Okay, that's the normal scenario. And that's why, you know, I put up this thing. We are actually aware of this, that advice to people depends on their age. Okay, I mean, this is one version of it. I mean, Churchill saying, if you're 20 and not a liberal, you're heartless. If you're 60 and not a conservative, you're mindless. I'm not necessarily admitting I'm mindless, but the point is the optimal decision differs based on how long you have to go. Okay, and similarly, if you are 20 and you have any money, put it in stocks or put it in yourself. In fact, Ford has said that nobody below 30 years old should invest in anything other than themselves. Okay, and then of course, if you are old and ordering, then keep all the money under your pillow because you need it tomorrow. Okay, so it changes the, you know, horizon changes the policy. Normally, in those cases, these are basically in the finite horizon case, you have what is called a non-stationary policy, where a policy depends on how much time you have left to go. Infinite horizon case is actually easier, because if you have infinite amount of time to go and you did one action, you still have infinite amount of time to go, which basically means all the infinite policies collapse into one policy. So there is only single optimal policy. Okay, so finite horizon case is harder to solve than infinite horizon case, because in infinite horizon case, there's only single optimal policy. Do people understand this? It's one of those cases where infinities are actually nicer, because infinity minus one is same as infinity. Okay? One interesting thing, of course, is if you do have an infinite horizon, the problem is that you could have sequences which are infinitely long. And even if you have immediate rewards for states defined, the question, of course, this is the stuff that I brought up at the end of last class, towards the end of last class, how do you make sure that the function, the utilities of the various states, that the sequence of states is somehow finite? Okay. Now, one interesting question, of course, is I never really told you until now, I mean, although I let you sort of imagine that in the background, I never told you until now, even, you know, I know that the utility of what I'm trying to do is find out what is the utility of going through a sequence of states S1 to S infinity. All I know at this point is it is some function f, okay, of rewards of S1, reward of S2, etc., reward of S infinity. I don't know which function. Okay, but the tricky problem, of course, is if you have infinite sequences, what are functions that you can come up with such that this thing will somehow become, I mean, how do you make sure that this function won't be unbounded for the infinitely long sequences? Okay, there are three ways in which you get out of this problem in Markov addition processes. One is the one that we talked about last time, okay, which is you just discount future reward with respect to the present reward. So if you get, you know, a reward of RSI in the ith step, it really is only worth gamma power I RSI. Okay? So basically the functions now, you know, are not RS1, etc., RS infinity. It's gamma power 0 RS1, gamma power 1 RS2, and so on. Okay? That you already understood that if you do that, you will converge. There's, you know, you can easily define the utility of the sequence to be bounded. Okay. Another idea is the following. If you have, in fact, in this kind of a scenario, if you have a policy and if you let it continue, ultimately it will fall into one of the absorbing states. When it falls into one of the absorbing states, which is basically death states, then there is no more six states to be exhibited. Okay, so it looks as if really you don't have to worry about infinities because ultimately you will not get state sequences which are infinitely long. Is that true? It is true for some policies, but not other policies. Remember last time I showed four cases that come depending on the different immediate rewards, and there's one case which is just avoid death. Whatever happens, just avoid death because you're having too much fun living. And that is a kind of policy where you'll never actually fall into this. You have a policy which is essentially avoiding the terminal state. So those kinds of policies are called improper policies. It's almost like the preachers making up, you know, you should always worry about death. You know, you shouldn't have too much fun in life. Okay? So if your policy is a proper policy, okay, if your policy is a proper policy, then you can be sure that there is a non-zero probability that every behavior will end in a sink state. Okay, so in those cases, even though you don't know how long the behavior would be, each of the behaviors would be finitely long. Okay. By the way, when I say behavior, I mean state sequence. There's one and the same. Behavior means the states that you went through. Yes?
We can have an improper policy for finite
horizon. What?
For finite horizon.
Yeah.
We can have improper.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And then there is also another one which we would not consider here, but in the MDP literature people do, which is even if you have infinitely long to live, consider per step reward that you get. And you can compare two policies not in terms of how long it will, you know, what is the total amount of reward that they will get, but what's the rate at which their reward is accruing. And those are called the average rewards per step policies. And technical treatment of this is very hard, so we won't talk about it. Okay? We sort of mostly will be talking about discounted reward. But sometimes we will set gamma to 1 and we let it be gamma equal to 1. That's because the problem underneath is going to admit a proper policy anyway, in which case it wouldn't have mattered even though you set gamma to 1. You understand now? So I will act as if I'm mostly taking at this, but sometimes you will see that I won't actually let gamma to be actual gamma but be equal to 1, in which case I'm assuming that underlying policies are proper. Okay. Now, the question, next question is, how do we evaluate a policy? If I give you an MDP and I give you a policy for it, how do you see how good it is? If you can tell how good it is, then you can compare it to some other policy and say how good that one is compared to this. Okay? So the basic idea is, let the policy run. Okay? You start the MDP, suppose this is MDP and you have a policy here, you start the MDP and from any random state, let the policy run infinitely long. Now if it has sync states, only until it reaches one of the sync states, because after that nothing happens. So once it runs, you have one behavior. So you compute the cumulative reward of that one behavior. Then you again restart the MDP, one more random run. Compute the cumulative behavior, cumulative reward, with respect to this policy. Okay? And now take the average, which would be the expected cumulative reward of this policy. Okay? If that is better than somebody else's, then this is a better policy. That is what we are going to try and formalize. Okay? Notice the beauty of it. We are talking about infinitely long sequences, but we run it infinitely often, you know, many, many times. You know, for each infinitely long sequence, we compute the utility of that sequence, take that number, run the MDP again, get another infinitely long sequence, take that number again, okay, take the average. Okay? That's the basic idea of comparing policies. Now, you can't assume that this is the way I will write algorithms, clearly. Because if this is the way we are going to write algorithms for computing policies, we might as well find something else to do. But this is where it all starts. Okay? Okay. Now, the first question, given that view, you have to first ask, how do I define the utility of a sequence of states, which is possibly infinitely long? This is something that's been sitting in the back of our head. Okay. Now, normally, nobody tells you, if you want to keep the MDP model very general, you shouldn't say what is the utility, just because utility of state S1 is some number, utility of state S2 is some other number, there is no obvious way of combining them. Okay? Because there could be utility dependencies. Because remember that in the state S1, I have left my left shoe, state S2 I get my right shoe also. Then it's not just utility plus utility, it could be much more or much less. Okay? So in general, if you want to keep the definition of utility of a sequence of states general enough, then you know it's a tricky issue. So the only assumptions that we will make about utility of the sequence of states is that they better be stationary. So whatever definition you come up with, it should be stationary in the following sense. If I have two sequences, S1 to S infinity, and another one, S1 dash to S infinity, S dash infinity, and if I tell you that S1 and S1 dash is the same state, then these two sequences should be compared in terms of S2 to S infinity and S2 dash to S infinity. Okay? Another way of saying it is, if you think that starting tomorrow, future F1 is better than future F2 for you, and if you tomorrow were to start today, you should still think that F1 is better than F2. It doesn't depend on the time. That's the stationarity assumption. And the interesting thing is, just that one assumption restricts the way you can combine utilities of states, such that there are only two reasonable ways of combining them, which thankfully happen to be the two ones that we understand well. Okay? So I'm skipping over a huge amount of, you know, background. So again, as I said, every topic that I talk about in this class, there is a book. Okay, there is a book called Markov Decision Processes by Peutermann, which you can read. You know, it's about 800 pages. Okay, where it actually talk about all these things, one ten chapter. But I'm trying to give you a feel for, you know, what we do in solving these kinds of things. Okay, so there are only two possible ways, and in fact, one of them is more general than the other. Okay. So the utility of S1 to Sn is a summation of the immediate rewards discounted by gamma power I, where gamma is the discount factor. Okay? Now, of course, if gamma equal to 1, it becomes that. So this sort of, I mean, this entire discussion here, it goes back to what you wanted to do anyway, which is hope that utilities of a sequence of states are essentially summation of the utilities of the individual states. That's what I wound up doing. But to do that, I had to make one assumption, which is utility representation of sequences are stationary. Okay. Now, the second question, now, of course, one of the things that you want to keep in mind is when you define the infinitely long sequence, utility of it in terms of this discounted reward model, right, then you know that the total value of this number will always be bounded from above by R max by 1 minus gamma. That's because you know that if you take R max, you know, each individual rewards are there, take the largest reward out and then divide everything by R max, then it really is a power series which is falling down, you know, with a rate at least equal to gamma. And so you can be sure that the summation has to be less than R max by 1 minus gamma. What?
Wasn't bringing something out of the utility function not consistent with?
No, all I am saying is, no, this gamma, all this is saying is, reward that I get one step from now is gamma time. If I'm talking about how useful it is right now, it's gamma times its use, from the next step. That's all I'm saying. The utilities themselves are there. So if you were there, if you come to the second step, then it won't be discounted. Okay, so that's the first step. The second step is now that I know how to compute the utilities of sequences, now I can talk about how to compute the utility of a policy, which is basically let the policy run, get a sequence, compute its utility using this formula, do this many, many times, take the average, which is taking the expected value. Okay. Now, what does it mean to run a policy? All I am saying is if I ever come to this state, I will do what the policy says I should do. Now, of course, because it's a stochastic problem, even after I do this, I might go this side or this side. But that's a different story. But I don't get to choose what action I do. The policy tells me what action to do. Okay? So, just a second. So then the point is the utility of policy phi is the expected utility of the behaviors exhibited by an agent following it. Okay? So that is a big expectation here followed by this number given that you are following policy phi. All that means is the state sequences you are showing came out when you wound up doing the actions that policy said you should do. And you have to take the expectation because it's a stochastic domain, doing the same action in the same state at different times might give you different outcomes. So you need the expected outcome. Okay? So it's kind of, I mean, there is no other way I can write this without this notation, because this is essentially what we are saying. Let it run multiple times, take the, you know, cumulative utility of each of those sequences, okay, and then take the average. Average is expectation. Okay, so that's the utility of policy. If I now give the utility of policy, then I can talk about optimal policy. What is optimal policy? Optimal policy is the one which gives this to be the maximum value. So all I need is the optimal policy pi star. For some weird reason, we call policies pi. Okay, that's the normal notation. Okay, an optimal policy pi star is arg max over pi, okay, so the specific pi for which this expectation will be highest. Okay? So now I have defined how to do optimal policy for you. At least you know what it means. Okay? Of course, clearly this is not the way you are actually going to compute the optimal policy, because you're dead if you try to do this. Okay? Because there are a power s different policies. And evaluating each of these policies in this way is very silly, because you wind up doing multiple long sequences and taking average. Having said that, I do want you to understand that this view is useful. Suppose you don't quite know the action model, okay? All you can do is, so somebody said, do this action in this state, do this action in this state. They didn't tell you what the actions actually do in terms of probabilities. The best you can do it and feel the pain in the real world. And then over a period of your lifetime, realize whether or not he's a friend of yours or not, whether they gave you a good policy or bad policy. Okay? In fact, in reinforcement learning, where you try to do optimal policy as well as improve the underlying action model, you wind up going back to these definitions. This is your bedrock. This is your f of x plus h minus f of x divided by h, h tends to 0 as the definition of derivative. Whenever things fall apart, you go back to that definition. Okay? Now the question, of course, is how are we going to use this stuff to do policy computation? Before we go that, one thing we can talk about is we have already talked about the utility, the immediate reward of a state. Let me talk about a new notion called long-term utility of being in a state. Long-term utility of being in a state given a policy that you are following. Okay? The long-term utility of being in a state given a policy pi that you are following is nothing but the same expectation except each sequence starts with that state. Okay? The difference between this equation here and this equation here is here I didn't tell you what is the first state. It can be any random first state from which the MDP starts and then just lives for a while. Okay? If I want to know the long-term utility of a specific state, what I do is start the MDP off from that state, keep following the policy, get the sequences of states, take their average value. That is basically what is the, you know, it sort of tells you what is the best you can expect if you follow this policy and you are in this state. Yes?
So let's say you have a policy that you're trying to improve and you're looking at one state and what the policy says you should go to next. Should you modify the policy so that it goes to the...
No, you are talking about how to change the policies.
Okay.
We're going to do that in a minute. But first understand the following concept. Yeah, we can start much of what we're doing here, you'll see, is because it'll allow us to compute policies faster than the previous slide. Okay? So there is this intermediate notion, which is a very useful notion, called utility of a state given the policy. Okay? Now, if I know this, if I define it this way, then I can also talk about the real utility of a state. The real utility of a state is its long-term utility if you are following the optimal policy. Okay? Now, this you have to understand. This is actually a very beautiful point. You know, you may be in a particular board position in chess, and you think it's just as bad or good as some other position. And then your uncle Kasparov is looking and saying, my God, you should realize that from here you're going to win. Because he knows how to play optimally from that state onwards. And with respect to that, this really is a beautiful state to be in, because after this you can't lose. Okay? And similarly, you know, during war you suddenly go up on a vantage point, you go up on like a high hill, right? If you know the optimal way of winning the war, that's a great thing, because from the vantage point you can look at people and look at your, you know, enemies and do the right, you know, you actually have much higher chance of winning the war. But if you have no clue about how to actually do fighting, then you go up this hill and you're thinking, my God, it's a bad state to be in. It's like I don't get enough oxygen, and you know, it's like I just really got tired. So the point is, a state's utility could be really bad for a guy who has a bad policy. Okay, but that's not the problem with the state. That's the problem with the policy. Okay, a complexity of a problem, for example, a sorting problem, can be exponential if I write the algorithm. But you can't define complexity of sorting problem to be exponential, because Rao is only smart enough to write an exponential algorithm for it. You have to say, if everybody in the world tries to write algorithms for, you know, sorting, even the smartest guys cannot do better than exponential, in which case it's exponential. But we know that, unfortunately, there are people who already wrote polynomial time algorithms for sorting. So we are dead. Okay? So similarly, the utility of a real utility of a state is utility with respect to the optimal policy function. Notice I don't know what pi star is, but I know that it is connected to the true utility of a state. So the true utility of a state can be seen as its long-term reward, long-term expected reward, assuming from there on you do the optimal policy. Okay. Now the interesting thing, of course, is this allows us to combine, easily, closely connect this notion of an optimal value of a state, which is defined in terms of the optimal policy. And then optimal policy itself is defined in terms of the optimal value function. Okay? Because suppose I showed this earlier, but suppose in this I give you the optimal value function somehow. There are numbers there. You can very easily convert it into optimal policy. Why? Because for every state, let's say here, I consider all the actions I can do. For each action, I know which state I'll get into with what probability. And if I get into that state, I know what is the total utility I will get. I take the expected utility of doing that action, pick the action which has maximum utility. So converting optimal value, in fact, converting any value to a policy is very easy. And in particular, converting optimal policy to optimal value, optimal value to optimal policy is very easy too. Okay? What's interesting, of course, is that, so in particular, this is what I said. If I were to give you the optimal utility U of S of every state, you don't have it. Suppose I were to give it to you, then you would be happy for the following reason, because you can convert it very easily into the optimal policy by, for every state, I consider, for every state S, you are trying to figure out what to do in that state, right? I consider all the actions I can do from that state, and the probability is that that action will take me to S dash times the utility of S dash itself. Okay? And then I sum it. That would be the expected utility of doing that action. I take the arg max over all actions. So the specific action which maximizes this expectation, that's the action I do. It's very easy to do this. Right? It's a bunch of multiplication followed by maximization over, it will only be a maximization over a number of numbers. A is the number of actions. Okay. Now, so this is very useful. You have to remember this. And there is another very interesting property that you want to understand because of the way the utilities are defined, which is a utility of a state is actually defined in terms of its utility of its neighboring state in the optimal case. Okay? Because utility of state S is the current immediate reward of being in that state times gamma power doing the best action from that state. Now, there is any bunch of actions you can do. For each action, you know what is the best utility you will get. Okay? And you take the maximization over all the actions. And you times gamma of this, you get the utility. This is spreadsheet calculation. You are combining, remember the way spreadsheets work, you basically say a cell's value is dependent on some other cells in the spreadsheet. And you give these formulas and essentially they can update each other until they reach equilibrium. So in fact, this is your first hint that maybe you don't have to do the crazy stuff that I said earlier to find the optimal policy. I can start possibly with any utility value and basically, in fact, one idea is to just try to solve these equations, okay, for all the states, such that there will be a unique true utility value. And once you get this, you can get the optimal policy. Okay? Yes?
Earlier, I was sort of thinking maybe something like hill climbing would help, but that looks more like converging.
Yes, it's actually you do hill climbing, except it will converge in this case. Okay? So, this is called Bellman equation. And you know, if you spend any time at all with Markov decision processes, you would either get sick and tired of Bellman or would love to love him. Okay? Because Bellman is the Mr. Markov addition processes, and he is famous for coming up with this relation. Okay, and all you wind up doing is you can use the Bellman equation to compute the optimal policies. I can already show you, you can already see, in fact, in the next slide I'll tell you three different ways. There are like 1,000 different ways of actually computing optimal policies, either exactly or approximately, but we'll talk about at least three of them. Okay, there was a question? Yeah. No, we will see an example in a minute. All we know is if you can solve these equations, then you will get the unique utility function. Okay? Let me say that in a minute, but we'll come back to that. So Bellman equations are the basis for computing optimal policies in Markov decision processes. Okay? The optimal value, and that they actually get you out of having to deal with huge number of policies and evaluating each of them separately. Okay, what they're doing in essence is, we'll see there are multiple things they can do. Either they can search in the space of values, sort of do hill climbing, gradient descent, to get to the optimal value function, or they can search in the space of policies to find the optimal policy, or they can do limited depth search to find an approximate policy. Those are the three things we'll talk about. Okay, so the equations can be solved through 3 points. One is value iteration, which sort of iteratively tries to improve the your current approximation of utility value until it converges. And when it converges, there is theory showing that you cannot converge to anything other than the optimal value function. Okay? And so at that point, you know that you can convert the optimal value function into the optimal policy function.
No local maximum.
In this, exactly. Okay. The other one is, it turns out that while value iteration is useful, how many different value functions are there for any MDP? Wake up. What's a value function? It's a real number given to each state. How many different value functions are there? Infinite. How many different policy functions are there? Finite. So you should be happy. In fact, why are we searching in the space of values when the number of policies are actually only finite? So another idea is called policy iteration, which avoids iterating over value first and instead just iterates from policy to policy. And we'll see actually in an example before we're done today, that in fact value iteration, I mean policies, converge much before values converge. So you reach optimal policy during iteration much before you actually reach the optimal value function. Okay? So this is actually considered to be a better idea than this. And then we also talk about approximately solving it using real-time dynamic programming, and that is just a lovely idea, because from there you can get to min-max search as game tree search. Or you can also think of that as the idea behind real-time A-star search, which is, if you are a single agent and you have no stochastic dynamics, etc., but you don't have time to go from initial to goal state all the way, and I give you only 10 minutes to come up with your first move, okay, what are you going to do? Which is exactly the way chess game also works. And in those cases, you need real-time search, and we never talked about it. Okay, so we'll actually, with respect to real-time dynamic programming, we'll talk about real-time search. So those are the three things that we'll talk about. Okay. Okay. Value iteration. And the good thing is, after this slide you get to see a demo. So at least you don't have to think too much, you can see colorful things moving around. So just, you know, suffer through this slide. Okay, so all we're going to do in the value iteration basically is, you know, because Bellman equation connects, you know, the value of a state to value of its neighbors, where neighborhood is defined in terms of the transition function. You are a neighbor because there's an action that I can do to get to you. That's the way, okay? So this is an equation. This is an equation that holds for every state. So there are only S states. So there are S equations. S simultaneous equation. How hard is it going to be to just solve S simultaneous equation? They're linear too, right? It's like, in fact, you know, if you consider this, so here, as a, you know, for this particular problem, I'm going to consider utility of 1 as the reward, which is minus 0.04 plus gamma times, maximum of the following expression. This expression corresponds to doing up, this corresponds to doing left, this to down, this to right. And arg max is basically maximum of these numbers. Except the problem is there are variables. U21, etc. are also variables. All of them will get values at the same time. Those are simultaneous equations. Why can't we solve this using simultaneous equations? Maximum. Understand that. Okay. The thing, the big bad wolf in the room is this guy. Had this not been there, okay, it would have been actually easy to just solve a set of simultaneous equations. In fact, this also tells you the following. If you actually had a policy and you wanted to convert that into value function, I already told you how to convert value function into policy, right? If you had a policy, you wanted to convert it into value function. The policy would have told you for this state that only one of these actions are right. So basically, let's say it was the policy set up. Then these would be gone. So the max goes away. So it truly is a set of linear equations. So policy evaluation corresponds to solving a set of linear equations. But if you don't know the policy, you need to do maximization over it, which only seems reasonable. Right? I mean, if you don't know what the policy is and you're trying to compute the best policy, then you have to consider doing the best thing at each point. Okay? So if you can solve these n nonlinear equations in n unknowns, where n is the number of states, you're done. It is better than what we were talking about previously, which is large sequences of states and talking about expectations over them and, you know, all that stuff. So this is looks like a better idea, but it's still too costly. So the idea that we will do is value iteration. What basically it does is take this equation and make this an assignment. Okay, it's a simultaneous assignment. So in the sense, everybody, you start with any random values for everybody, okay, except the terminal state, for which the value has to be their immediate reward, because it makes no sense to guess anything else. Right? Okay? And then everybody get up, look at your neighbors, update your value. And then everybody again get up, look at your neighbors, update your value. And if you keep doing this often enough, then you would reach optimal value. And how do you know you reached optimal value? Because between two iterations, the value function doesn't change. And of course, the question is, how do you know that you didn't get stuck in local minima? That we don't explain to you here, but there is theory showing that there is only one minimum, and then you will reach that. Okay? So basically, all you're doing is, for each state, you start with any random values in all the states, except the terminal states which have the immediate rewards. And one possible random value is to consider letting everybody have their immediate reward as their value. Okay? And then update their value, immediate reward. So let's see a little demo as to what might happen. You know, that's, you can see that, right? So here is a little, grid, okay? So I started here in this case, I don't know whether you can see, yeah. So the greens means good states. They have positive rewards or positive values. Reds are bad states. They have negative rewards or negative values. Okay? And I'm also assuming absorbing states at this point of time. So that means this guy is an absorbing state. This is also an absorbing state. So once you go there, you can't come out. Okay? And then everybody else, any value, they can be initialized with any value for everybody else. All I'm doing right now is I'm doing it as basically their reward itself, immediate reward itself. Okay, and then I put a discount function of 0.9, discount value of 0.9 at this point. But I, you know, you can try with different values of discount functions. In fact, part of what I want you to do between this class and next class is to play with this applet and get a better intuition as to what happens when you change the rewards, when you change the discount values, etc., etc. So let's see what happens here, step by step, okay? And one thing I want you to understand is, what are these class-like things doing? What they're saying is, upfront, I don't know any action, what action to do here. In the beginning, we have no actual policy we are talking about. But as the policy, one of the things I will do is as I'm improving the value function, okay, for each value function, I can consider what's the optimal policy function. Because I know if that were to be the optimal value function, I know what must I be doing. Okay, and then when I make the decision, I will show only one arrow in those things. As the numbers keep changing in the cells, keep an eye also on how often are these arrows changing. If arrows stop changing, that means policy has converged. If numbers stop changing, that means value has converged. Okay, do we get it all right? And all this thing is doing is essentially just for each state, it looks at its neighbors, updates its value function based on its neighbors' value functions using the best action it can do. Okay. Now, first things I would understand is, let me just do this. Okay. So step one, what happened? These guys became green. Okay. And this guy, so it's more greenery here. And these things kind of became even more negative than before. What is happening here is as the value iterations start, the guys who are close to high-valued states, they realize that they are, even though they were depressed before, thinking they are only minus 0.04, they now realize, hey, I'm sitting next to a pot of gold, so I must be reasonably rich. So they become better. But then the guys above them still don't know. The good news hasn't traveled to them. So they still have long faces. And what happens in the value iteration is slowly everybody realizes that there is a way they can get to the good guys. Okay? So you'll notice that the greenery sort of goes from the high reward states to encompass everything. Okay? So that it should not be surprising. So notice that already in some cases you know specific actions that are better than others. Okay? Step. More greenery, more greenery, more greenery, more greenery, more greenery, more greenery. Notice that by now already most people have a single action except somebody like here. What this means is here he can't tell difference between the two actions. They're both equally good. Okay? In which case, if that was the case in the end, you would just do one of them. Okay? Is the policy changing as I'm doing this now? The value is still changing. The question is the policy changing? Is the policy changing? Where? Oh, okay, this guy. So this guy, I guess. One of these guys are changing. Okay, so, but you do see that much of the policy has sort of stabilized pretty much. Okay? And the value continues. Now, in fact, even the, now policy is not changing anymore. Unless I see, you see something that I don't see here. Okay? But the value is still not stabilized because little changes are going on. Okay? So all this is showing is two things. One, of course, is that you get to play with this at home, so I'm not going to spend any more time on this. You notice that if you were to do value iteration on this, okay, this already you know what its value is, okay, from the beginning, all the way you know its value, okay? And similarly for 4, 2, from the beginning you know its value. This is x-axis is the number of iterations. Y-axis is what you thought was the value of that state. The value of this guy never change as the iterations go on, okay? Now what happens is in the beginning the values of the states that are far away kind of come down. Because they are depressed, that not only are they losers, they are surrounded by even bigger losers. So they are even more depressed. But then the good news comes slowly that in fact some of the losers around them have figured out a way out. And so I'm not so much of a loser myself now because I can get to them and they'll tell me how to get to the right thing. Okay? So that's the beauty of it comes down and starts going up. Okay? And then they will all ultimately actually reach the converge. Okay? And when they converge, in fact, it's unfortunate that I didn't show the numbers, but there are actual numbers for this value function. Similarly, the previous one, you already saw the optimal value functions too. Okay. Now, once I give the value function, I know how to convert it into the policy, right? Because if I know the optimal value function, this is what I do to find the optimal policy. In fact, this can be used for any value function. If given a value, I can compute what its policy is. And given a policy, I can solve a bunch of linear equations to compute what the value is. Okay, keep that in mind. And you just saw that the value function seems to take longer to converge. Policy sometimes gets done faster. That's not surprising, because really, if you have, let's say, two states, okay, and only two actions per state, there are only really four policies. How many value functions are there? Infinite number of them. Because every point in this two-dimensional space is a different value function. Now, so what must be happening is that there are regions in this space corresponding to each of the policies. Okay, so if you happen to be in this region, you would think this is your best policy. If you are in this region, you'll think this is. And then if you come here, this anywhere here, you would realize that the optimal policy corresponds to, you'll get the optimal policy. But one of them in this region happens to be U star, which is the true optimal value function. But long before you reach it, you would already have reached the optimal policy. As soon as you entered this region, you're already in the optimal policy. Okay? So searching in the space of policies is better than searching in the space of values, it looks like. Okay? And in fact, there is this, basically this picture show essentially the way the value function changes with respect to the optimal value function as the number of iterations go, and the way the policy changes with respect to optimal policy as the number of iterations go. And you see that the policy sort of comes down very fast, whereas value very slowly becomes the optimal value. Okay? So, what happened? Yeah. So, the next big idea, and we'll stop after this, really, is policy iteration. And all you do, given all the stuff that we discussed in the class, it's very simple. You pick a policy upfront. Instead of randomly initializing the cells with a value, randomly initialize the state with an action. You know, it can only be one of the actions that are actually possible. Okay? So pick an action, arbitrary initial policy. Okay, if you pick an action for each state, you've got a policy. So you start with an arbitrary initial policy, and then you repeat until no change in pi. Now, a change in pi essentially is there exists at least one state which used to have an action before, and now it has changed. Okay? Until there is no change in pi, you take the current policy, compute the utilities given the policy. What is that? That is nothing but solving a bunch of linear equations. Right? Because I told you that had you had the, if you are following a single policy, you would know which action you are doing at that state. So there is no max. So it would be just a series of linear equations. And you can solve linear equations actually using any linear equation solver, linear algebra technique. Okay? So you compute the utilities given the policy, and then update policy as if this new utility function is the optimal utility function. Okay? Which basically means, for going back and forth, but what happened? Which basically means, given a utility function, I convert it into policy function. Okay, this holds, for optimal utility and optimal policy. But if I give you a utility function, you can always convert into its greedy policy. Okay, and all policy iteration is going to do is do these steps multiple times. So pick a policy, compute the utility that corresponds to that policy, convert the utility back into a new policy, and then go back to the loop. And that will allow you to basically make these steps through the space of value functions, discrete steps through the space of value functions by policy. Okay? And the big thing to understand is when you are evaluating a policy, you get a bunch of equations of this form. All that is missing is the max. That makes all the difference, because it's not just a sequence of linear equations. Okay? And policy iteration is known to be more efficient than value iteration. Now for the killer to depress you, all of these are polynomial in the space of states. These are polynomial in the space of states. That is really depressing, because how many states are there? If you have n state variables, there are 2 power n states. And value and policy iteration are polynomial in 2 power n. That's nothing to feel good about, really. Okay? But that's the best you can do. Okay? What we'll do when we come back next class is talk a little bit more to, you know, if you have questions on the value and policy iteration, and then talk specifically about real-time dynamic programming, which actually is a much simpler idea. All you do is look ahead, you know, consider a future and take the linear, the leaf nodes, take their values to be just the reward values and back it up using the Bellman equation. And that will give you a way of combining execution and search together. And then that will lead us from there to game playing, because in game playing you make a move and then you have to wait for the other guy to make a move. That's all.